Welcome back to my love letter time machine. Hi, I'm Ingrid Bedgell Hughes, and I'm serialising the love letters of my great-great-grandparents, Fred Shepherd and Janie Warburton. Travel 140 years back in time with me now, where we take a look at Victorian history through their eyes. And today, Fred tries to nail down a date for their wedding, and Janie's father, James, is suddenly taken ill. After the drama of the coal miners' fight last time, Fred's letters, at least, settle back down into a work-as-usual groove, where he continues to shine at the North Eastern Steel Company, and it looks as if, from his next, that it's not just Mr. Cooper who is noticing. 21 Church Street, Middlesbrough, April the 18th, 1882. My own darling wife, I was glad to hear that the usual monthly came off, love, but I almost felt disappointed, for I fully expected that it would not. But for your sake, darling, it is best as it is. I was very pleased to receive your letter this morning, love. It was so good of you writing by return. I should have done the same, but today I have been so busy preparing statements for the directors' meeting on Thursday. It is to be held in London, and Mr. Cooper leaves here tomorrow afternoon. I wish I was going with him and could stop at Sheffield. I should like to see you, darling. It seems almost a lifetime instead of a week since I saw you. We have had the auditors for a fortnight checking the books, and they reported that the books of the company were kept in a very efficient manner, and that they received every assistance from the one in charge. This report will be presented to the directors on Thursday. Mr. Cooper says he is quite pleased with the result and that it is a feather in my cap and will go a long way towards establishing my position at the works. Don't you feel pleased, my darling? I'm proud of your husband. I feel 6 foot at least now. I am pleased that you prized the birthday card, love, even though it was inexpensive. Of course, I know you would. That reminds me that you never told me whether the scissors were the proper size and whether they were good ones. I expect that other things prevented us from trying them at Easter, love. I am glad you agree with me to have a quiet time at Whitsuntide, darling. I want to save the money for you, my darling wife. Kelsey is not usually quiet, love. He is generally the other way about. I think Tom Hughes one of the best nap players I've ever come across. I am afraid that Tommy will think that I am taking advantage of his friendship in this way. We are going to buy some machinery from Brown, Bailey and Dixon, and Mr. Cooper asked me if I could get to know what it cost when new. I wrote to Tom for the particulars, and when he finds out we are taking advantage of his information to pull down their price, he will perhaps be offended. It was not a job that I cared particularly to do, but I could not very well refuse to try when I was asked so pointedly. Do you think I could, love? Miss Gill and Blind George would no doubt derive great benefit from their meeting in the pigsty, love, wouldn't they? It will, my darling, as you say, be better to have a good start when we are married. We shall have now in any case, love. We will not have any more outdoor business, darling. It seems to be too great a strain. I am quite well now, love. I hope you are better too. I am sorry that you have to suffer so much on my account, wifey. I scarcely think it was necessary for your Emma to stay in bed all the time she was waiting for the gathering to burst. I always think it is better for people to be up and knocking about if they can, anyway. It makes them forget their little ailments. It is a good job for the children that they are at your house, love, but I should think that if she had to do for them, she would be a good deal better off. Never mind, love. You won't have much longer to stay with your very amiable sister. We have had some glorious walks down to Woodhouse Mill, my darling. As you say, we shall have some more glorious walks when I get you here, wifey, and then we shall have some happy Sundays. I feel sure they will be happy, darling, because you, and only you, can make me happy, and to be with you is happiness for me, love. I am sorry that you had such a poor service at Woodhouse Church, love. I always thought they had such a good service there. It is rather curious that you and I never got to either Treton or Woodhouse, and we had intended going, when we first became acquainted, to both places. Do you remember, love? We made an appointment to get there, and were prevented by the rain, I think. Is Tommy Wortley and Miss Mills any nearer married than they were? I fully expected they would be by this, love. I am very much obliged to your good mother for her frequent presence to you, love. I think we shan't require much more crockery ware, shall we, love? I saw a set of beautiful dessert plates in a window here. I did not ask the price, as I thought I would leave all that to you until you came, darling, and then you can suit your sweet self. With respect to the taking of apartments, I am pleased to find that you would do even that for my sake, darling. I think it will be a good plan, but we will talk it over at Whitsuntide, darling, and then perhaps we can think of a better way. I have not heard anything more about the lodgings here. I don't see much, but just go about as though nothing was the matter. I only noticed the difference when I came back at Easter. I shall try to put up with it until our marriage, love, because I don't like changing until I change for good with you as my darling wife. It would be quite lively with the Colliers and the Bobby. I shall look at tomorrow's paper for a report of the trial. We got a letter from our new secretary this morning, asking if I would go down and look at his house again. I'm going on Saturday afternoon. If it is a fine day, I expect it will be very nice down there. I wish I was going to take you down, my darling, for a breath of sea air. I shall have to close now, as it is 12 o'clock. I remain, my darling wife, your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. 21 Church Street, Middlesbrough, April 20, 1882. My own darling wife, I thought I would commence my letter tonight, love, so that I could finish it tomorrow after receiving yours, for of course I shall get one tomorrow from you, darling. We have had 2 easy days since Mr. Cooper went. We have been able to get off this last 2 nights just after 6. Excepting that it is not good to work late. I don't much care for getting done early. The nights seem so long. I do so long for you, my darling, so much. It seems almost unbearable without you, wifey. I shall miss you so much these summer nights, love, because we had such glorious walks together and were thoroughly happy when we were together, love. It was so pleasant to walk down the lane with my arms around your waist, darling, and your head on my breast, and then at the gate, your arms around my neck. It would be like heaven to have that time over again, my little wife, wouldn't it? But we shall have an even sweeter and happier time, darling, when you come here. I am looking forward to the time when I shall see my darling wife every day and give and receive a kiss when I come home. It will be blessed indeed, wifey, that won't it? Marston was asking me today when the event was coming off. I told him about September. He said that he and his wife would be very glad to have your company for a fortnight before then, so you could look around and get things ready for our marriage. What do you think, darling? Would you like to come and spend a fortnight here before then? I think it is very good of him proffering the hospitality, don't you? It makes it rather awkward with Davis making the same offer beforehand. I don't know how to settle it at all. We shall have to talk it over at Whitsuntide, love, with the other things that are to be left over. I wish it was Whitsuntide, darling. It seems so long to wait before seeing you then. It's 37 days now, darling, and then I see your sweet face again. I hope you will be in better health then, my darling. You must not fret, love, with regard to the invitation you mentioned to Hathersedge. I think I should go by all means, love, if they can stay at home, and it is a desirable place to go. I think it would do you good, my darling. When do you expect to go? With reference to the excursion I mentioned to you, to Castleton, I only gave you what John Mears said. I shall certainly not want to go there, because it is quite as hard work as Matlock, and not so much to see. And then we should have to tramp from Attercliffe, which I could not stand at all. I should not have any objections going to Roche Abbey again, provided they come back through Handsworth, but only on that condition, although it would be rather expensive. But if you don't object to waiting until October, it will give us a little more time, and we should be able to make a fair start. I shall be able to wait until October, I have no doubt, so it will be dreary work waiting. I mentioned September as being about the earliest time. You know, my darling, that I want to take you away as soon as I possibly can, because I think you would be happier here with me than you are at present. However, shall we decide on October, wifey? I should myself like a quiet Whitsuntide, love, if we could manage it, and that is the reason why Roche Abbey could be better for us than Castleton, because we should be able to have a good talk together, little wifey. I shall take good care not to work over when we are married, love, because I shall not want to be away from you any more than I can help. I shall be agreeable to go to Polly's on the Whit Monday, if we don't go anywhere else, love. It will make you very busy, love, this next week, with the club feast and the rent dinner coming so close together, but you will, I don't doubt, make the best of it. It is for the best, love, you know. I will now go to my virtuous couch and dream of you. Good night, my darling. One kiss, love. Continued Friday, April 21st, 1882. I was rather disappointed, love, at not receiving a letter from you, but I expect it would be busy yesterday. I hope nothing is the matter, my darling. I shall look forward to a letter tomorrow morning. It is beautiful weather here now, being quite warm and mild. I wish I were going to take you to Redcar tomorrow, love. It would be a treat. We are having another quiet day here. Mr. Cooper does not return until Monday. Has Carrie come home from Harrogate? I find that the fare from here to there is only 6 shillings and 6 pence return. Can't you be taken ill and nothing cure you but the Harrogate water or the Redcar sea air? I'm sure either would do you good, love. I think I should go to the theatre tonight. It is so slow stopping in and not very interesting outside. You see, we have to go so far before getting anything like country. And if we stay in, I feel as though I was doing Mrs. Gordon an injustice in burning her gas. I wish you were here, love, and then I should be quite content to stay in with my wife. That is, if she would let me and did not tire of my companionship. What do you think, darling? Do you expect to get tired of me? I hope your father keeps well in health, and your mother and Emma in temper, and then perhaps it will be bearable at home. Remember me to Carrie if she is at your house, love, and thank your John for me for the loan of his pipe. Trusting that you're well, love, and that you love me as much as ever. I remain, my darling wife, your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. I'm rather struck by the financial calculations that have gone on here and how there seems to be a trade-off between going on an excursion at Whitsuntide and getting married a month later. I think I'm reading this correctly, that one of the reasons Fred and Janie will have to push their wedding back to October is that they wish to go on a trip with their friends. We won't get to hear what Janie thinks about this for a while, because their letters cross in the post, and for poor Janie there seems to be no let-up in the drama when her father, James, is suddenly taken ill. Hansworth, April the 21st, 1882. My own darling husband, I received yours yesterday and was very sorry I could not give you a few lines in return. Polly came up to dinner with the two children, but that would not have hindered me from writing, darling. But Annie Wortley came to tea and we were very busy after tea, so I could not find time. You'll forgive me, won't you, love? Polly was quite as nice and full, fun as ever, but as usual, somebody generally spoils it. Emma got a little sup. I feel as if I could thrash her within an inch of her life today. Father has been very ill this week. He went to Sheffield on Thursday and was taken very bad with a kind of shivering fit. It came on quite suddenly, about 10:30. He had been in the bar after he came home and came out quite cheerful and said he would go to bed. Just as he was into the room, he began trembling all over and would have fallen had I not taken hold of him. We got him into the armchair to the fire and put hot brown bags to him, and then Mother got him to bed. He had a dreadful night. We sent to the doctor Shaw on Wednesday. He came about 2:00. He said he had taken an overdose of chlorodyne, and we were to keep him quiet and warm, and he thought he would come round again. He was a little better yesterday and today, but our Emma has been getting it pretty freely today, and he is bothering himself to death about her. It is a shame that she goes on in this way. You don't know how I feel for him. To think what he has done for her, and to repay him in this way. I haven't the patience to look at her. She was trying to make Mother believe she cared about him on Wednesday night by squeezing a few tears. They are what I call crocodile tears. I can't believe in them. She had some drink then. I should give her a good talking to today, but we are not private at all. You can't say a word without someone hearing you and spreading it. I don't think it would do her much good, because there is no reason in her. She would only curse and swear at me. I don't wonder at men murdering their wives if they are anything like her. She would provoke the best man living. But, darling, you will be tired of hearing about her. But don't you think it is a scandalous shame for her to do like this? The directors' meeting will be over by this. I wish you could have come on to Sheffield with Mr. Cooper. I should have been delighted to see you, darling. It does seem a long time since I saw you. My darling, I do feel both pleased and proud of my husband. I feel 6'3" in my stocking feet as Mrs. Shepherd in the future to think I shall have such a clever, loving husband. The reports of the very efficient manner in which the books have been kept will be a feather in your cap, and I have no doubt that it will establish your position at the works, love. We shall feel very great soon, shan't we, love? In fact, I think I shall have to do like the servant girl did, and go in a new silk dress, never look at anybody. I do wish I could kiss you, darling. You generally send good news. I read Polly just that piece of my letter, and she said I was to tell you that she was going home feeling nonetheless proud of having such a clever brother-in-law. You could do no other than ask Tom about the machinery when you had been asked so pointedly to get to know. The scissors do not fit my case, love. I thought about keeping those in the leather case, especially for your birthday present. They are a very handy little pair. The other pair, I think, will fit. They are both good ones. I will give you a long letter for Sunday, darling. I shall always be your loving, true and faithful wife, Janie. I've tried to find out exactly what hot brown bags were, but not been very successful. It looks as though they were the sort of bags that dry goods were sold in, things like wheat or flour, and so I'm imagining that they were warmed in the oven and then tucked around the patient like hot water bottles so as to bring up the temperature. Janie's description of how she and her mother cared for James when he was taken ill is one of those moments where you realise how much life has changed for the better since then. Robert Roberts, in his book A Classic Slum, writes, "This was the heyday of quack medicines, a time when millions of the new literates were reading newspaper advertisements without the knowledge to gauge their worth. Innumerable nostrums, some harmless, some vicious, found ready sale among the ignorant. One had to be seriously ill before a household would saddle itself with the expense of calling a doctor." The Wellcome Collection, the Museum and Library of the History of Health, on their website puts it like this. Chemists were available for free, whereas doctors were not. And most Victorians got their drugs over the counter without a prescription. The wide range of drugs available at the time is intriguing. The Victorian chemist stocked not only patent and proprietary medicines ready-made, but nostrums made by himself and raw ingredients for home remedies. There was laudanum for dysentery, chlorodyne for coughs and colds, and camphorated tincture of opium for asthma. Opium pills were coated in varnish for the working class, silver for the rich, and gold for the very rich. Angelic children frolicked on the bottles of Ayer's Cherry Pectoral, a mixture of alcohol and opium that would now be deemed a poison. Cocoa leaf, from which cocaine is now obtained, was advertised as a nerve and muscle tonic to appease hunger and thirst, and to relieve sickness. So you can see why someone might fall foul of an opioid overdose. Chlorodyne was invented by a Dr. John Collis Brown, a doctor in the British Indian Army, and its original purpose was in the treatment of cholera. It was a mixture of laudanum, which is a tincture of opium, tincture of cannabis, and chloroform, and as such was effective in relieving pain and treating diarrhoea. While it was sold under the branding of Dr. J. Collis Brown's, local chemists would make up cheaper generic versions for sale, and the following is an ingredient list for one such formulation. The numbers that follow relate to parts per thousand. Mixed chloroform, 75. Tincture of capsicum, 25. Tincture of Indian hemp, 100. Oil of peppermint, 2. And glycerin, 250. With alcohol, 20%, 450. Dissolve morphine hydrochloride 10 in the mixture, add it to diluted hydrocyanic acid 50 and enough alcohol, 90%, to make 1,000. Hang on, I hear you ask, isn't hydrocyanic acid something to do with cyanide? Yes, it is. I found an advertisement for Collis Brown's in the Derby Mercury for Wednesday, the 26th of April 1882, so it's completely contemporary to the time that Janie is writing. The advert reads, Dr. J. Collis Brown's chlorodyne is the true palliative in neuralgia, gout, cancer, toothache, rheumatism. And then follows a quote from a chemist. From Dr. B.J. Bolton & Co., Horncastle, "We have made pretty extensive use of chlorodyne in our practice lately and look upon it as an excellent direct sedative and antispasmodic. It seems to allay pain and irritation in whatever organ and from whatever cause. It induces a feeling of comfort and quietude not obtainable by any other remedy, and seems to possess this great advantage over all other sedatives that leaves no unpleasant after effects." Incidentally, J. Collis Brown's mixture lives on in the UK for the relief of coughs and diarrhoea. It still contains morphine and peppermint oil, the cannabis having been removed during the 20th century, and the morphine content is now massively reduced. Obviously, we know that opioids are extremely addictive, and it appears that James has been regularly knocking back the chlorodyne, I assume for the treatment of his back pain. While Dr. Shaw diagnosed James as having taken an overdose, I also wonder whether or not James was exhibiting withdrawal symptoms. Sadly, back in Handsworth, signs of James's recovery are not yet evident in Janie's Lex letter, where she seems rushed, judging by the switch to pencil halfway through, perhaps in an effort to get at least something in the post to Fred, while juggling all of her responsibilities. Handsworth, April the 22nd, 1882. "My own darling Fred, I received your letter this morning. I was so sorry to disappoint you yesterday, but I really could not help it, love. I feel quite disappointed that I could not write. It is always such a pleasure to write to you, my darling. I do love you. I did not quite finish answering the questions in your last letter. You asked if I thought Tommy Wortley and Miss Mills was any nearer getting married. I don't think so. I think Annie Wortley would be only too pleased if they would, as Tom is not one of the best brothers. I should not like to exchange places with her. I told you she came to tea on Thursday. She has got inflammation in her eyes. She told me that Mr. Glover and her would be married just after next Christmas, she thinks, so I shall have one old friend in the new world I am coming to. I don't think we shall require any more crockery ware, love. It would be best to let the dessert plates be for a while, and then, as you say, I can please my sweet self, but I think we could do without them just at first. It would be better to try and stop in the old lodgings until we are married, love, if they are not very disagreeable. You might change for the worst. Should I send the dinner service now? I am afraid it will be in your mother's way, and I should not like to inconvenience them at all. I have not had a chance to go and see them this week. I shall walk down, I think, tomorrow. I wish I could have gone with you to Redcar this afternoon. I am sure a breath of fresh sea air would do me good after tea." And this is where Janie's changed to pencil. "Father is still very poorly. He's been in bed since Thursday. He has not been quite so well today as he was yesterday, owing to that sister of mine. I can hardly call her a sister. He is quite low with worrying about her. She has not been in his room today. I should think she feels a bit ashamed. We have had a walking match between William Barlow and Johnson the gardener from the top of the church lane to the wood and back. Johnson has won it. It has made us very busy. I am sorry, darling, but I shall have to cut your letter short again today, and I do like you to have a longer one for Sunday." There's no sign-off on that letter. Again, no doubt due to the rush caused by James being out of action and the influx of customers from the walking match. I'd never heard of walking matches until I read this letter, but then found out it was also known as pedestrianism, a very popular sport in the 18th and 19th centuries, and gave rise to the modern sport of race walking. Matches would be held for the prize money or for wages and attracted many spectators. Gambling on the outcome was a major aspect of their popularity. I didn't find a newspaper report for this one in Handsworth, but oddly enough found one for May in Attercliffe, where one of the participants was named Kelsey. I'm going to try and find out if this is Fred's old work colleague Kelsey, and let you know what I find when we get to the events in May. But in the meantime, I'll say thank you so much for listening to my love letter time machine. Next time, Fred takes Janie to task about her harsh words regarding Emma, and Janie gives Fred interior decorating advice. Until then, You can find me sharing excerpts of Fred and Janie's letters on Instagram at My Love Letter Time Machine, all one word. As always, it would be great if you could click on the ratings, leave a review, and I would be especially grateful if you would share the podcast with someone you think might enjoy it. And you can write to me at myloveletterTimeMachine@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.